This is Jody Stone on April 16, 1986, interviewing Walter H. Fenn, F-E-N-N. Walter, where were you born?
I was born in Lakeville in what was known as the Tupper House, and that house is still standing. It's on the road going up toward Hotchkiss School, just after you go by where used to be the old railroad trestle. And I wasn't too aware of the event, but I'm told later that I was born on the kitchen table. Our family doctor, Dr. Peterson, lived at the other end of town, and I think he must have been in the hospital or something that day for one reason or another, but he never got there in time. But I arrived on the kitchen table. And my mother's name was Beatrice. My father's name was Merrill. My mother was born in Lakeville and lived there her entire life. Her family came over from England, from Sheffield, England, and my dad was born somewhere in the New Milford, Washington, Connecticut area. And he worked for the Southern New England Telephone Company and retired after 48 years. But he also had some side jobs because, of course, during the middle of the Depression, he worked at other things. In fact, he ran the projector at the Stewart Movie Theater in Lakeville. My sister Gertrude and my brother Merrill and another brother Alan were all born in Lakeville and went to school in Lakeville. I can remember some of the teachers that we had. There was a man by the name of Teague, who was a school superintendent, and later on Mr. Loring was high school principal. I can remember that I went to first grade in the building which was known as the Friendly Club. And I believe that the other building up on that same side of the street was a Catholic school. And I used to ride my tricycle up and down the sidewalk there by the jigger shop and so on.
Who was in your class?
Well, I can remember Martha Folks, Fayette Card, Garwood Belter, Nina Beebe, Constant Mantis, her sister Rita, Morag McDonald, Herbie Atkins, Mary Haid, and Myron Melis. There were only 17 in my high school class. I don't recall many of the people that were in my lower classes. We moved from, that is, a school was moved from that building called the Friendly Club down to the building that was in Lakeville, down near the area where the post office is now. And I went through grammar school there in my first year of high school. My second year of high school was in the school which is now up on the Lincoln City Road, and graduated from there in 1934. I used to know most of the masters at Hotchkiss School in later days when I was living and working in Lakeville. I remember Dr. Beeler and George Millmine and Mr. Coolidge, Mr. Parsons, Bill Fowl, and of course Mr. Monahan, and all of those people that were associated with Hotchkiss. We used to play baseball and hockey with the Hotchkiss school people as well as some of the other ones around town. Hockey was one of my favorite games in those days because the skiing wasn't anywhere near started the way it turned out to be when the Sacher people came to town. The Sacher family, you know, started the ski business in the Salisbury Lakeville area, and the Norwegian family, and there were five brothers, I think. There was Magnus, Johan, Otar, Olaf, and Sverre, and there was a sister. And they were great skiers. In fact, they made their own skis. I had a pair of Saker skis, one of the first pair of skis I ever had that had steel edges on. I'm getting ahead of my life here because we didn't really start skiing seriously until, 1935, 1936. Up until that time, we used to play hockey, and it would bother us if it snowed, and we had to clean off the ice.
Where did you play?
Well, we skated on the factory pond, and we skated on the lake, of course, and we used to play hockey over on the Hotchkiss hockey pond. And I can remember some of those fellows we used to play with. Hoppy Rudd, for one, was a great hockey player. Did you know that Hoppy Rudd was a hockey player, a baseball player, and a football player? And he was on the varsity at Yale, but he was on all three of those teams when he was a freshman, our first year at Yale.
That's remarkable.
Yeah, there was Jack Hawley and Martin Johnson, Eddie Kipp, Jack Fisher, Bill Hallahan, Kemi Bauman. I remember one time we took our hockey team down to Yale and played in the Yale Arena, played a preliminary game for Columbia and Yale were playing a game that night, and we played the preliminary game. One of the funny things that happened was Kemi Bauman, who was skating with us, took a slide into the goalie net and got his skates all tangled up. And somebody up in the crowd said, you should have had your snowshoes on. Well, from then on, of course, we called him Snowshoe Bauman. Well, getting back to my school days in Lakeville, I remember particularly a couple of the teachers. I had a French teacher by the name of Symington, Miss Symington. And I took French for 2 years. I had a choice of courses, and I passed up typing in place of French. Can you imagine that? And there was another lovely school teacher who taught history with Miss Dodge. And I got to go back to my first grade. We had a teacher by the name of Miss Horky. And I'll never forget her because she had a real stern class. I remember getting rapped on the back of my knuckles with it.
Excuse me, Walter, how do you spell her name?
I think it was H-O-R-I-T-Y, Hardy. Horty.
Thank you.
Something like that. But she used to rap us on the knuckles with her wooden ruler when we didn't behave. Something they don't do today. Let's see. We moved from the Tupper House down to a house on Cleveland Street, which was just off of what we used to call Muck Alley in those days. Muck Alley, of course, is now Farnham Grove. And we lived in the Ethan Allen House, which was next to the theater. And later on in years, when my family moved away to first to Willimantic and then to Hartford, my brother Merrill and I stayed at the Holly Block, which was up across from the Margaret Williams house. It's not there any longer. Burned a couple of times and was torn down. Perhaps you remember Leverty's drugstore.
Absolutely.
And Benjamin's store. That was a sort of a department store, a grocery store. And there was Robert's store down across from the Dewport garage, and A.H. Heaton's, and Rudman's Market. And most of those buildings are all gone now. I remember the Roberts store burned 2-3 times. Up on the top floor there was a basketball court, and we used to play basketball up there. The fire destroyed the top floor of that at one time, and then later on it burned down some of the other portions of the building. The climbing course, it was all torn down, and there was a market at the lower floor. I think it was First National Market.
You're right.
And of course, that's all gone now. I remember one time when beer and wine was legal, and I belonged to the fire department, and so did my dad, and the bottom floor was on fire, and the little beer store was in one corner. And they were, of course, throwing a lot of water on it, and we were down in the basement lifting out some cases of beer out through an open window, and as fast as we lifted them out, somebody was taking them away and putting them over on the back porch across the street. Well, when we went to look for the beer that was, we thought was there, somebody had taken it and put it up in Bauman's tin shop. Well, it took us about 3 days to find it, but we did. Now, let me see. What else can I say, Jody?
Well, I'll tell you what I'd love to know about is you told me once about where you worked, what that whole area of Wells Hill looked like.
Well, I worked at Vail's Farm at one time during the summer. Maybe you know Jimmy Vail.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Vail's still alive, but his father, Frank, and Mimi Vail, his mother. They had a dairy farm and also raised potatoes. In fact, they had a large potato field on the racetrack, along the racetrack road, and harvested potatoes for Hotchkiss School and, I guess, Salisbury School. And I can remember on a rainy day prior to planting, we would sit in the barn and cut up potatoes and proceed. And I always liked raw potatoes, and we used to sit there with a chunk of cattle salt and eat raw potatoes over here.
Where was it? Or where?
The farm?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know where the road goes as you go up Wells Hill Road? Where the road goes in, it used to be going to a family by the name of Jerome.
Is that Woodland Drive?
Yes, I think so. Well, opposite that, there's the house has been restored now, but that was the Vail farmhouse.
And that's where the Roots live.
I'm not sure who lives there.
I believe so.
But the farm was down over the hill and all along both sides of the road. The fields went way back to the south, well, it'd be to the north. Yeah, it'd be to the north, I guess. But we used to play up there, and I remember we used to milk cows and bottle the milk, deliver the milk. A fellow by the name of Bill Shalott worked for Frank Vail. And I'd ride with him in the morning, and we'd deliver milk all around town. And one place we used to stop and deliver milk was the Farnham Tavern, and Bill Perry ran that as it wasn't a drinking place, but it was a tavern where people stayed and they had rooms. And you know that building is still there.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's an apartment.
Yes, it is.
But I remember sitting in the kitchen in the morning and having a cup of coffee or something when we delivered the milk. And kids used to play up around the farm there. We used to hunt woodchucks, and young Jimmy at that time was out playing in the hayfield one day, when at that time they used to load the hay with a pitchfork, a pile of hay at a time. And Jimmy was playing games with his brother, I think, and jumped under one of these haycocks, and his father went to pick it up with a pitchfork and stuck it into little Jimmy. Well, it wasn't too serious, but pretty much shook up his father, needless to say.
Now, what else was up on Racetrack Road? Was there a racetrack when you were
there? Yes. Oh, yes, the racetrack was there. I don't know who used it in those days, but I understand it's been restored now. And Dr. Noble takes his trotting horses there, or does he still do that?
I don't know. He did it one time. Was there a skeet shoot up?
Oh, yes. Yes, that was something that Jack Fisher instigated. He and I built a skeet field up there, and we formed a little club. And we used to go up and shoot skeet on a Sunday morning or whatever. And I don't know how long that lasted, but I moved away sometime after that. But we had a neat way of retrieving the clay pigeons, because they cost a penny a piece. Today, I don't know what they cost. We would buy our shotgun shells and clay pigeons, and for a dollar, we could shoot a round of skeet, which is 25 birds. But in order to conserve any that didn't break, we put a net up on each side and a barrel of water, 55-gallon barrel of water down at the bottom of the net, so that if you missed a bird and it didn't break, it would hit the net and slide down into the water, and then we tip the barrel.
Pretty smart. Something else I'd love to have you talk about is the theater group.
Oh, well, having been in the theatrical business, you might say, in high school, Gertrude Drummond and Margot Street got together and formed what they call the Lakeville Salisbury Players. And Margot, who of course was married to Julian Street and lived on Wells Hill Road, she had formerly been the director of the Lighthouse Players in New York, which is a blind group. And she got started with us, and we did several plays, some of which I don't remember, but I remember one play we did was The Royal Family, and I played the part of John Barrymore, and Gertrude Drummond was in that. She was Ethel Barrymore, and oh, let's see, who else was in that play? Anyway, the group of the Salisbury Players consisted of people like Gertrude Drummond, John Drummond, Jack Fisher, Bob Osborne, I think, was in two plays that we had, and myself. And we used to put on shows in the Salisbury Town Hall, but Margot was a wonderful woman, and she did all the directing. In fact, she directed and acted in some of the plays. And it was through the influence of Julian Street that I finally left Lakeville and went to work for Pratt & Whitney Aircraft in East Hartford. And that was when the war in Europe was heating up, and I remember Julian saying to me one time that if I didn't expect to get into the service, into the military, I'd ought to get into something that was essential for the war. So Jim Cutting, who was Hotchkiss School, I used to play baseball with Jim Cutting too. He played with this group in Lakeville. And he happened to have a brother by the name of John Cutting, who was working for Pratt Whitney, and arranged an interview for me through him. And I went to work for Pratt Whitney in 1940, I guess, or late 39. And I spent the entire war with them, worked in the factory, and then finally was put out on the road as a tech rep.
And you never moved back to Lakeville?
No. At that time, my father and mother lived in Hartford, so I went and lived with them. And lo and behold, that's where I met Betty, who lived just a few blocks down the street from where I live, which is, that's another story.
Tell me, when you were growing up, do you remember anything about town events, parades?
Oh,
was
yes.
The town grove functioning?
Oh, yes, yes, that's when Dave Timmons, well, the town grove then was, he leased it from Mrs. Cantine, and he had a boat livery there, and of course, we used to swim there, and in the summer I can remember spending a good part of my day at the Lakeville Lake, either fishing or was swimming. Used to buy a bag of peanuts for a nickel. Dave was quite a guy, a very frugal man. He would put out the boats and the raft and that sort of thing. Some I can remember Dave used to keep all of the nails that he pulled out in the fall and straighten them out and use them all over again the next year. The first parade I can remember, Jody, and this, I was 4 years old at the time, was at the end of the war, 1918. And my dad belonged to the Home Guard. And I can visualize today the parade that they had coming up the street in front of the Main Street up toward what was the Salisbury Bank and Trust Company. That was one of the things that stuck in my mind even at that early age. My dad carrying a gun. And
how about 4th of July celebrations?
Oh yeah, yeah, we have 4th of July celebrations. The ball field, of course, in later years is there. And Jack Fisher and I, we were pretty good pals. He went to school, Miss Stewart School, which was across the road from, a little bit down from where the Lincoln City Road is. And he used to go to school from 8 o'clock or from 9 o'clock in the morning from noon or something like that. And I had to go to 3:30. I didn't care much for that guy. But we got together. And I grew up with Jack from about the age of 14, I guess. And Jack traveled in a circle of people that I was very fortunate to meet. Different people than we probably would have met if it hadn't been for Jack. And we palled around a lot. Of course, he had a car. Well, one thing I forgot to say about the hockey episodes at Hotchkiss. Henry Ford was there at the time. And he didn't play hockey, but it was his job to pick up the equipment and take care of it and stuff like that. He was the first man that I ever knew that had a car at Hotchkiss. He was allowed to have a car, and that sort of set the precedent and other.
Why?
Of course, his father, Edsel, owned the White Hart Inn. And Henry was a choice student, I guess. His father came and stayed at the White Hart Inn often when Hank was going to school, and he finally bought the place.
Convenient.
And that changed hands, of course. Willie Russell owned the White Hart Inn at that time. I don't know if you ever knew him.
No.
He's quite a guy. I'm running out of...
No, you're not. I want to ask you about, speaking of the White Hart, what was the Wake Robin when you were growing up?
It was an inn. It was an inn. They had a beautiful old place there. I didn't have much opportunity to associate or frequent the place, but I remember that's one of the places we used to stop and deliver milk from the farm, from Vale's farm. I think probably vegetables and whatnot that they grew on the farm. But it was pretty much the way it was when I moved away. I think it's about the same as it is today. I haven't been there in a long while. I know they had a beautiful area down on the lake shore. I remember Dr. Knight's school.
Oh, you do? Tell me about that.
Well, my grandfather kept a rowboat down on what's called Norton Shore. Incidentally, you got a Norton in your name.
My husband's middle name.
Right. Well, Norton Shore was just this side of, on the Lakeville side, of that big building that's across from the church.
Mm-hmm.
That was Dr. Knight's home. And we lived down over the hill on Muck Alley. And my brother Merrill and I used to walk up and go down over the field, Dr. Knight's field, and take my father's rowboat and go fishing. But the school, of course, was there, and some of the students, some of the patients, I guess you would call it, would go down and swim and play around down on the beach, down on the shore. I think you ought to shut this off and I'll tell you a little
bit. Why was it called Norton's Shore?
Yeah, it was Norton. We called it Norton's
Shore. Who was he?
Well, it was Norton lived in a house. There's a driveway goes in before you get to Dr. Knight's house, and that was the Norton home. The Rambler's Inn?
No.
Remember the Rambler's
No.
Inn? Well, the Rambler's Inn was on the road before you get to that driveway, and that was run by a couple of women that it was sort of a little restaurant and a place where people could stay. It was across the road from Bert Roberts' house, and he owned Roberts' store. I don't know who owns that house today. But
who were the people who lived around you when you were a kid? Do you remember who your neighbors were?
Oh, yes. There were, on one side of our house was a Patchen home, Lester Patchen, and he had three sons, Lester, Frank, Irwin, and Chet. And Chet, I believe, is still alive today in the radio business. He was in those days. He had a shop down in the back of the house. Then on the other side was Mike Sweeney and his family, and John Schaffer. And up the road was Tom Sweeney, Mike's brother, and the Ewellin family, and Silvernail, and Whalen. Oh, it's all changed down there now. Way on down the road, of course, was the town farm, which was later bought by Dormer Cannon's family.
I didn't know that was the town farm.
Well,
I've often wondered where it was.
Yeah, a friend of mine by the name of Eddie Kipp and I used to go down there woodchuck hunting and squirrel hunting and whatnot. One day we got into right after the Cannon family bought it, and it was not yet being lived in by that family, but it was being restored. It's a beautiful home today. But there's a barn across the driveway, and I remember one time we got into that barn with shooting pigeons. And we put a few holes to the roof.
I bet you did. Is there anything else you can remember about your childhood that you'd like to talk about?
Oh, let's see. You don't want to hear about the time I shot myself.
Yes, I do.
Well, that was rather a tragic thing, and it's a wonderful thing that I'm still alive, I guess. But my friend Fayette Card and I, we used to travel around together a lot, and we were trapping rabbits with box traps, and one day we went out to move some box traps, and I wanted to go up to Vale's farm with him to go hunting. My mother said, no, it's too early. It's too close to lunch. You better stick around. So we went up behind Silvernail's property, which is on the road toward the Cannon farm, not very far away, probably a half a mile. And I had a little single-shot 22 rifle, which I had done some work on because it wasn't in the best shape. And foolishly, I stuck it into the box trap just to spring the box trap. And the box trap came down and hit the hammer, and the bullet went off and went into my chest, just barely missed the heart. Well, Fayette was down in the woods a little ways from me, and he thought, you know, I'd shot a rabbit or something. So he came over, and by this time, I really didn't know what had happened. But I knew something had hit me. And he looked at, and I had a white sweatshirt on, and he saw this ring of blood. So I said, I think I shot myself. So he walked me home. And my mother was standing in the kitchen, and she looked out the window, and just about that time, I went flat on my face. Well, she called my father, and he came home, and and called Dr. Peterson, and I went to Sharon Hospital. And I think that was on a Saturday. And on Thursday, he took the bullet out, which had just stopped about that far under the skin of my back. I'll never forget him coming into the room, and he had the bullet in a piece of gauze. And I kept it for a long time. I can't believe you did.
Was the hospital, how big was the hospital then? A cottage hospital?
Well, it wasn't very big. I don't vividly remember exactly how big it was. I spent a couple of weeks there, I guess. And I came out of it.
I'm glad you did.
Luckily.
You think that about wraps it up?
Well, let's see. I didn't talk about the drum corps, did I?
No. I wish you would.
Well, we had a man by the name of Cyril Beards who lived down the road where I lived. We formed a drum corps. We had a great drum corps. We got into parades on the 4th of July, and Memorial Day, and even go out of town on parade. And I remember Jimmy DuBois was the drummer. I was a drummer. There was another boy by the name of Marky. We were three drummers. And there were about probably 10 or 12 of us in the group. Most of them played fights. Matter of fact, I saw a picture in the Lakeville Journal, well, maybe a couple of years ago, and some captain said, "Who knows these people?" Can anyone name the names of these people? So I sent in all the names, except one.
Who were they?
Well, now, I have the picture, I can tell you. But there was Jimmy DuBois and Marky and Cyril Beers and myself and the others I really can't recall. I'm looking at the picture again. But we used to go to parades in other towns. And, to Waterbury at the time. I remember parading down the street in Waterbury and drumming away, and all of a sudden one of my drumsticks went flying.
Roberts.
And I told you that her father worked at
Wild and Hoxton. And the night panels were made by the Warner. Yeah, the Warners, who had a factory up on the street by the watering kettle there that goes up to Mount Rival.
Oh, yes.
They made the handles out of coca cola.
Of course they did.
Phil Warner.
Phil Warner.
And Don, of course, Don Warner's father, his family lived in that house there across the library. Now, let me see if I can think of something else that might be halfway interesting. Do you have some questions?
I think that about that is. I think, Walter, you're terrific as a narrator. I really do.
I do. Let's go.
No, start just the way you just told me. Norton.
Is it ready?
Yeah, it's on.
We asked me about Norton Shore, which is adjacent to Dr. Knight's shore, and it was one of the fishing spots as kids we used to go to because the area around the shore there was loaded with little bluegills and fish like that. And the reason for it was that the inmates used to go down on the shore and they would scale their piss pots out on the lake, and of course they would sink. And they made great little homes for bluegills to raise their little families in. And whenever anybody wanted to get a load of bluegills for eating, we'd